Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're supposed to have a warmer than normal November before we hit a colder than normal winter, supposedly. Joining us now to talk about the winter weather forecast in all of its perplexity is NBC4, not his perplexity, its perplexity, is NBC4 meteorologist Marshall McPeak. Welcome to the show, Marshall.
Thanks. It's a pleasure to be here. It's nice to meet you in person after listening to you on the air for this long.
Well, nice to meet you, too.
Likewise.
It just seems like just in the last week, people have started to talk about what's winter going to be like. And I was wondering, as a professional weather person, meteorologist, do you start to feel that too, or people start asking you more often, what's the weather going to be like?
Well, you know, we get the requests for some of the most bizarre timing on forecasts. We'll get a request in October for somebody's wedding that's next June. And unfortunately,
really
can't give you a good idea on that one. But what we can do is we can look at the conditions that we do know and what we do understand and kind of go with a broad, paint it with a broad brush and sort of see what's out there. So for this winter, one of the things that we're watching is La Niña. And you've probably heard that 1,000 times, El Niño and La Niña. Basically, in simplest terms, what that is, El Niño is warming of the ocean water that's off the west coast of South America. La Niña is cooling of the ocean water. It's only a couple of degrees, but it makes an amazing difference to what's above it. So what happens is when you get that change in the water temperature, it actually changes the air currents above it. Believe it or not, all the way up to where we are. So what happens is it shifts the jet stream a little bit, and the next thing you know, we're either getting colder than normal conditions or warmer than normal conditions. Now, for a La Niña year like we have come in this year,
colder than normal.
The water temperature is colder than normal.
Right.
So what happens is the jet stream shifts a little bit farther north out west and just slightly south in the eastern half of the U.S. So our temperatures, based on that, are likely to be close to average or slightly below average because we'll get that cooler air from Canada. And our moisture is going to be a little less because we'll have the jet stream sort of making a barrier between us and the Gulf Coast. So we end up with drier conditions, but we also get cooler air. Now, the catch to that is
boring.
I know. It actually makes much more sense on a map. It really does. But we can also get some cooler air out of Canada that can also come with some storms. So you get that random just dump of snow that comes in now and then. So at this point, let's go with a average to slightly cool temperature-wise winter and slightly drier than average winter.
Which means not a lot of snow.
Less snow, yeah.
Which has a lot of people celebrating, probably. But
not so much the school kids.
But not me.
It's, you know what? It is
not
it
that
is
I
amazing.
Like people being homebound or being stuck in the snow in their cars, but snow makes it prettier.
I am a warm weather person.
Okay.
Our weather team, we have two warm weather guys and two cold weather guys. And for Nunnally and I, bring on those thunderstorms. It's a blast in the summer. Jim and Ben love the cold weather. So we've got to kind of balance out. You know, Jim Ganahl has his own snow machine. He has a snow machine, so he can actually, at certain times of the year, he'll be the only house on the block that has a
secrets
full yard of
the
snow.
Weather stars,
yeah,
out there.
There you go.
Wow. All right, but getting back to La Niña, though.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, everybody, Marshall McPeak, NBC4 meteorologist, is with me right now. If you have a question or comment for him, he's only going to be with us for about 10 more minutes, so get the call in or the email in quick. The number is 614-292-8513. He has it memorized.
Oh, yeah. I listen all the time.
He's lip syncing me. And you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. So getting back to the La Niña thing, what makes the water cooler or warmer?
You know what? It's interesting because we don't actually know. We know what it does. We know the signs that it's coming. And we know the effects. What actually triggers it? We don't actually know yet. And so that's all still under study. It's a lot like tornadoes. We know what they look like on radar. We know when to expect that the conditions are right for them. We know certainly what happens when they touch the ground. But what actually triggers it to move from cloud to ground each time, the trigger for that, we're still studying. So there are still some unanswered questions out there. But we do know that it runs in cycles for El Niño and La Niña. And those cycles can range anywhere from 2 years to 7 years. And at the moment, we have a relatively significant La Niña going on, and it's much, much cooler water off the west coast of South America. And then that, as we mentioned before, changes the air currents above it, so we end up with cooler conditions.
I only remember first hearing about El Niño maybe back 25, 30 years ago. Is that when climatologists and meteorologists discovered that this phenomenon?
It was one of those discoveries. They said, hey, it's only been in about the last 20 or 30 years that we've really begun studying and keeping track of the sea surface temperatures.
Okay.
We have better measuring techniques now. We have more buoys out in the oceans to be able to monitor that kind of thing. And so now that we have more data, we're able to study more of that and figure out a little bit more about what's happening out there. It's only been in the last decade or two that we've actually had that data. So that's why we've begun to hear more and more about it. And even once you heard about El Niño, it was still years before you heard about La Niña.
Right.
And it was the same thing, where once we had the data, then we began to see more of what was happening. On the west coast of all the continents, you get cool water. It just has to do with the way the ocean currents circulate. So on the western side of the continent, you usually have cold water, and it upwells, and we end up with the great fishing conditions they have off the coast of South America. It's why it's great for the whales off the California coast, because it's that nice cool water that they like. You don't find them on the east coast because the water is too warm, especially in our case with the Gulf Stream.
Weird stuff with that hurricane weather going up the east coast, and then we had that snowstorm.
The early snowstorm.
What the heck? I mean, the earliest I've ever seen snow was when I was skiing in Colorado on October 31st one time. But come on.
I was in Colorado one time. It was July 1, and doggone it, if we didn't have snow, we were just baffled, but we went out and played in it.
Yeah.
Anyway, this storm a couple weeks ago was the earliest that they had ever had snow in some parts of New England, and also the heaviest snow that they had pretty much in the entire region. Central Park sent records. They set records all the way up the East Coast for feet of snow. A friend of mine was stuck without power for 7 days before they finally managed to get it back on. It was a bizarre – you've heard of the story of the perfect storm. Wasn't exactly the same situation, but it was just one of those fluke occurrences that we ended up with the conditions and the storm coming up the East Coast. It became that big old nor'easter that just got them.
We had a caller wanted to know about Thanksgiving weather. I know you don't want to predict.
Well, you know what?
What are we talking about?
I learned a long time ago, don't leave the house without a forecast. So let's see. Next Thursday. At the moment, next Thursday looks okay. If you're traveling on Wednesday, for now we're going to go dry, at least here in central Ohio. There's a low-pressure center that looks like it's going to scoot across the southeastern U.S. So around here, I think we're going to go dry for now for next Wednesday and probably into Thursday. And so your Thanksgiving travel weather, headed over the river and through the woods to see Grandma, you're going to be fine.
In central Ohio. Can't speak for the rest of the world, folks. Email from Paul. On a lighter note, the woolly worm forecast is for colder weather. The ones I've seen have had more black on them this fall. So woolly worms, as you mentioned, it could be colder, but...
Well, and it's fascinating because the woolly worm legend is one specific moth caterpillar. And if you find a different one, if it's white... Not the right caterpillar. It may be white with a black band, not the right one. It's got to be the orange and black ones.
Okay.
And it's an ichthyosnema moth. I have to look it up every time. But let's see if I remember. It's the wider band means a rougher winter. My mother found three of them and freaked out a little bit. it's a lot like the groundhog. He's got a 50-50 shot at it.
Is that much of a legend then?
Oh, yeah. You know, there's a woolly worm festival in
Vermilion. I know there is, but meaning, come on, the groundhog thing, I don't fall for that for a minute. But the woolly worm always seemed like there's some actual nature thing going on there where kind of like they know something we don't know.
I would love to say that there is. Here's the catch to all
of that. So why does the woolly worm
change? I don't really want to blow everybody's bubble, but the fact of the matter is the worms actually react to the weather. They don't predict it.
So that had to do with the fall.
With what
then.
Would have happened to them earlier in their own lifespan, not so much what's upcoming. They're not actually preparing for anything. They're reacting to what was happening in the early part of their lifespan.
Let's try to get to a few calls before the end of our segment here. Tim in Clintonville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Tim.
Hi, Tim.
Thank you. Thank you for your time, as always. Mm-hmm. I have a question more so about, like, prior forecasts, especially rainfall, and not so much the amount of rainfall, but whether it's going to rain or not, based upon the National Weather Service's hourly, like, graphical forecast.
Mm-hmm.
It just seems, it's been my experience, that they've been off, not so much by the day, although that, I mean, there's no reason why that can't be off a little bit, but even hour to hour. I'll look at the forecast and it'll say there's like a 20% chance of rain and it's raining, or there's a 100% chance of rain and it's sunny.
Look out the window!
Well, that's what you always say, the best forecast is looking out the window. But is there some reason, was the weather unusually difficult to forecast recently, or?
Well, it's not so much that it's any more difficult to forecast one day to the next, but I will tell you what our process is. And the process is, both for local forecasters and for the National Weather Service, we look at the computer models, and the models often disagree and they move in different directions. And so that's where the human factor comes in, and we're able to look at, for example, there's one particular model that deepens a low pressure center a little too much, and so it makes a little more rain than it probably should. Once you understand some of the eccentricities of the models, you can begin to interpret a little bit more based on that. So, for example, the forecast that I assembled for this morning, and you probably heard me say, for now, we're going to go dry on Wednesday. And that's because by the time we get to Tuesday and Wednesday, the models begin to diverge. And either or any of them could be a little closer. So you lean toward what you think is more likely to be the case, and you put that forecast together. As for the hour by hours, those are really, really hard. And the reason you hear us talk about percentages is because on any particular day at any given location, there's a chance that you're going to end up with that shower. Now, when we say scattered showers, it may be dry at your house all day, but it may rain like crazy at Ann's house. So we put that chance in there so that you know that there is a possibility for those showers, but they may not be everywhere that day.
Or
hope that helps, Tim.
Your backyard. Thank you, Tim, for that question. John in Clintonville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just actually touched on the question I had a little bit at the very end of your explanation there. I have an ongoing debate, or actually it's a bet, and hopefully you'll win me some money here. A friend of mine and I disagree when the meteorologist forecasts
the percentage.
Percentage, exactly. Uh-huh. For example, say tomorrow you say there's a 50% chance of rain. I told him that it will rain, definitely, but it will only rain on 50% of the area. And he says no, it's like flipping a coin. It may or may not. There's a 50% chance that there will be rain. And I say, no, it definitely will rain, but just not on all of the area. Just
okay.
On 50% of the area will get the rain.
This is the part where I get to play frickin' frack the car guys and say, do you really want the answer, or do you want me to make something up? Because I think it's going to cost you some money.
That's
friend,
not what I wanted to hear.
Yeah, that's what I was afraid of. Your friend is actually right. When we say that it's a 50-50 shot at some rain, it means at any particular point on the map, they have about a 50% chance of getting a shower. And so your friend is right. It's a little like flipping a coin. So if we say 50-50, and that's probably a few scattered showers that are impossible to, because humans don't have that technology yet, they're impossible to actually pinpoint to an address. So we'll tell you that they're going to be out there, and we know that you've got about a flip of a coin's chance of getting that particular day.
Thank you, John, for that question.
A lot of people ask that.
Yeah, it's a good question.
It is.
Now hopefully it's cleared up for eternity.
And by the way, one of the other big questions is partly cloudy, partly sunny, mostly cloudy, mostly sunny. It is all based on eighths of the sky that are covered. So each one has a particular definition, and the more eighths of the sky that are covered with clouds, the more cloudy it becomes. So we go from sunny to mostly sunny to partly cloudy to mostly cloudy.
Which, again, can vary from where you're at.
In fact, it can vary from one side of the county to the other. How many times have you looked out the window and you've seen all kinds of sunshine off to the west and it's cloudy as anything where you are? So that's part of what that's about.
Marshall McPeak, we're going to continue this conversation in one fashion or another on Sunday.
I think we will. We're looking forward to having the Ann Fisher on our broadcast on this Sunday. Mindy Dreyer and I do a Sunday morning show on NBC4 I almost said WOSU. No. It's on NBC4. And we are thrilled to have you on our 9 a.m. broadcast on this Sunday. So
everybody, you know, make a note to yourself.
See
if you
what
Ancestry see me.
Really looks like.
You can go. It's at 9 o'clock on Sunday morning at Channel 4.
And
so
Mindy will be out and about. We're not telling anybody where she's going to be. It's a surprise.
Right.
So I've done that the last few weeks. This time it's her turn. She's going to go out. She's got a great surprise for you. And you get to hang out with us for the morning. So everybody can see Ann Fisher in person.
Yikes. Okay. Well, Marshall McPeak, thanks for joining us today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
And thanks for listening. When we return, we will turn our sights on recycling with Mayor Mike Coleman. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
This is 89.7 NPR News. Be sure to watch Columbus on the Record Friday night at 8:30 on WOSU-TV. This week, News and Public Affairs Director Mike Thompson and his panel discuss the Ohio Tea Party pushing an anti-union amendment. The Columbus City budget adds cops and curbside recycling. Opponents of election reform law come short on required signatures. Those topics and more on Columbus on the Record. It's Friday night at 8:30 on WOSU-TV.
Support for 89.7 comes from Cooper & Elliott, a law firm dedicated to protecting the vulnerable, preserving the rights of citizens, and creating safer communities through the civil justice system. Online at CooperElliott.com.
40 degrees in downtown Columbus, sunshine today, a high of 43. Clear skies tonight and cold, a low of 25. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
This week, Columbus Mayor Mike Coleman unveiled his proposed $735.5 million city budget for 2012. Among many other things, the plan earmarks $2.2 million for curbside recycling. Joining us now to talk about that is the mayor, Mike Coleman. Thanks for joining us, Mayor.
How are you, Ann?
Very well, thank you.
Good. Before we get started, yeah. I know you get into recycling.
Okay.
Yeah, you are a celebrity in this town. I mean, it's just no doubt about it. We were at a function together, not together, but separate. We saw
right,
each other right, together, right?
Right.
And, you know, I was relishing in my fourth term victory and waiting for people to come up and say thank you. And instead, what they did, they came up and said, Ann Fisher, could I have your autograph?
Right.
Yeah,
I don't know. I thought they were, you know, paying homage to the mayor as well.
No. Ann Fisher, I mean, you know, you're a big deal in this community.
Wow.
So
I don't know. We'll see. I'm going to be on, as we were mentioning earlier, with Marshall McPeak on Channel 4 on Sunday. So
yeah, he's a pretty big deal, too.
Yeah, he's a pretty big deal. Yeah. Well, thank you very much. It was nice to see you. And we were talking about, you know, Saturday night that you're going to be unveiling that budget. And I thought we'd focus in a little bit today on the recycling and the curbside recycling proposal that you have in there. And I was wondering, first of all, you know, what kind of feedback are you getting on that now?
Well, the kind of feedback I'm getting community-wide is it's about time. And why is it taking so long? And when can we get this going? People are wanting it this very minute. And so, wait a minute, we got to phase this in. Phase this in over the course of the next year. Beginning in the spring of 2012, because this is a big city, 227,000 households, almost 800,000 people, many, many, many neighborhoods, and we have to phase it in over a year period, and it's not something we can start right away once we announce it. But I tell you, the response has been great, and we just got to get it through council, get it funded, and get it going. I'm very, very excited about it. And the reason I'm so excited about it is it has taken a long time. Now is the time to pursue curbside comprehensive recycling in our community. And, you know, we work real hard to try to make our city a green and sustainable city. But if you don't have comprehensive recycling in your things as a green city, you're really not a green city. You're a green pretender.
City Council President Andy Ginther has said he's having second thoughts about it. Have you talked to him since those reports came out? I think it was in October.
Yes, he has. Okay. But, you know, I think the thing is that we have to answer his questions, and we should, and we are explaining the program to him that the time has come for this right now to move forward. It's a good thing for the city, for the community, and that we hope we can gain his support. We just have to answer his questions, and he's raised issues, he's raised questions, and that's okay. That's what legislative bodies are supposed to do. And so it's my responsibility to explain it, to be as proactive as I can in explaining it, my staff working with other members of council, and hopefully we can get this adopted.
My guest is Columbus Mayor Mike Coleman. If you have a question or comment for him on the recycling proposal and his proposed budget, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. He'll only be with us for about another 12 minutes, so don't wait if you have a question or comment. 614-292-8513. Council President Andy Ginther has said that the city needs to be careful about now starting something it cannot sustain. Is that a legitimate concern given the economy and probable more cuts coming down from the state and federal level? Is this sustainable, and how so, if so?
Well, if this were Detroit, maybe. But this is Columbus. I set aside $10 million, not for the 2012 budget, but for the 2013 budget, to handle the forthcoming cuts from the state in order to close the gap from the state cuts that are coming down on cities. And the answer is yes, it is sustainable. In fact, if we gain a 20% diversion rate at the landfill, diverting recyclables into the recycling stream, what this will cost per household in the city of Columbus is as low as 26 cents per household per month. And it is not an extra fee. It is a basic city service. And it's something that people in this community have wanted a long time. We are now, for the first time, in a position to achieve it, and is our best opportunity to achieve a comprehensive recycling in the city of Columbus. And this is our moment in time, and I do not want this window to close.
According to Akron-based Waste and Recycling News, Columbus had one of the worst recycling rates, 14.5%. And you brought up Detroit a few minutes ago, among the nation's 30 largest cities. In other measures, it ranks below Cleveland and Detroit in terms of its sustainability and green initiatives. I mean, it's worse than Detroit.
Yeah, Columbus is the worst city in the country when it comes to recycling, and that's not something I'm proud of, and we should be embarrassed and ashamed by it. When we now have the ability to do it, and since we have the ability to do it and it can be sustained, then we should proceed with it.
Charles, you're on the air. Charles, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Charles.
Hi, Mayor. Quick question. Just explain the economics of recycling. When you collect the things like plastics and glass, do we then have to pay somebody to use them, or do they pay you to have the materials? Does it pay for itself once you've collected it?
Thank you, Charles.
Okay. Thank you. What happens is we bid out to had several bids, and we ended up with Rumpke. And Rumpke will collect the recyclables in a bin that we will provide every single-family household in the city. And it's a bin that we can, that our citizens can roll down to the curb, and I think it's 64-gallon. It's one of those taller bins. It's not as big as the trash bin, so there's clearly a difference between the two. And it's a different color. It's a blue color. So we roll it down to the curb. Rumpke will, we will pay Rumpke to pick up the recyclables. They will take it to their distribution plant, material plant, and begin the process of repackaging it, and they'll put it in the recycling stream and resell it on the market. We thought that was the best way to do it for us in this community, and for the city, it's probably the most efficient and cheapest way to accomplish it.
You know, a lot of folks, particularly young people, and this is just anecdotal, have said to me they're frustrated that they live in apartments and they won't be able to participate in this.
Yes, and I understand that, apartments. That is something that, you know, this program does not address. This addresses only the single family. And so with respect to apartments, we have drop boxes. And those drop boxes are distributed citywide. We need to educate the public as where they are located, schools and grocery stores and places like that. And in addition, there's a couple of businesses, a couple of young men I met, an organization called VIP. And they are approaching developers and the ownership of major apartment complexes. And they're cutting arrangements, cutting deals with these apartment owners that they will collect the recyclables on their behalf for every apartment renter, and not charge the apartment owner, the apartment renter, if the apartment owner will pay for it as a service to the apartment renter. And I've embraced those young men. And this business seems like it's taken hold. And so there are alternatives for the apartments. But this is our focus right now is for single-family residential.
Do you see including multifamily residential in the future?
It's possible.
Okay.
I haven't taken it off the list. I wanted to tackle this first.
Okay.
let's get single-family out the way. Let's address it in the best way we can, and this is the best way. Now's the time to do it. It's a big program. You know, there's a lot of homes, a lot of single-family homes in the city, 227,000 homes, and that's a lot of stops along the way, a lot of neighborhoods. And so let's focus on that, make it work well. There'll be tweaks along the way we'll have to do. This is our first time. Let's get this done, and then we'll look to do something bigger in the future.
Karen, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi, Karen.
I was the one who had asked about apartment dwelling, and the problem is that a lot of the dumpster-type facilities that have been put near the grocery stores and, you know, for instance, I live over here on Cleveland Avenue and 161 area, and there were places right over in our space where the old Kroger's used to be and over at Easton and so on, but those big dumpsters are gone. So you used to be able to go ahead and recycle. I mean, there are still places where you can recycle your newspapers, but a lot of us have been really ardent recyclers for a long time. But so now we can no longer recycle our bags of glass and cans and you know, appropriate cardboard and all that kind of things. The dumpsters are just gone. So where do we go? What do we do?
Well, that's, you know, the dumpster program is a SWECO program. If there's dumpsters that are gone, we've asked, you know, we've been pushing this, and SWECO's been good to provide it. If there's locations that where there was dumpsters, there are now longer dumpsters, I'd like to know about it. We'll prosecute and see what the issue is. Maybe they relocated it to some other place.
Who should Karen call?
Maybe this construction. Call my office. Call Leslie Strider at
6457673.
Right. And we'll look into it.
Okay.
If you've got a location, she'll look into it. Leslie, look into it and see what the issue is.
All right, Kieran, thanks for that call. Martin in Sunbury, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Yes, I heard of an incentive program. I don't remember where. We're in the initial years of a mandatory recycling thing. They offered people, they would check, randomly check trash. And if your trash was sorted, they gave you $100. And that went down over time. And then in the out years, they started... It started being a fine that slowly went up if your trash wasn't resorted. And I just thought that was a great idea. Give people incentive for a few years, followed by fines if they don't do it. And it pays for itself over time. So anyhow, I just wanted to throw that into the mix.
Thank you, Martin. Mayor, did you consider things like that?
Well, we looked at all kinds of scenarios. We looked at a coupon program. We looked at, we talked to just about every entrepreneur out there on the marketplace for the past 2 years. Because I announced this in 2010 that we were going to go this direction. We actually started before then, actually, and I announced that we were going to do this in 2010 and get it done in 2012. And we did a huge amount of research. We looked under every rock, under every stone. And we feel that this, for our city, this is the best way to go for now. And we'll evaluate things over time. We expect a pretty good diversion rate. And, you know, we'll see what how that goes. So, you know, if there are other programs somewhere out of these, we'll look at them as we go along. But this is, we had to put a stake in the ground and say, we're doing it. We're doing it this way. This is the best way for our community, and let's move forward.
John and Sharon Wood, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, John.
Thank you. I'm calling to thank you for starting the recycling program because I have proof that it works. I recycle, you know, everything I can every week at one of the drop-off boxes. And my garbage in my regular 60-gallon can, I still get it picked up every week, but I could easily not get it picked up but once a month because there's nothing in it. I mean, all the paper, glass, cans, cardboard, it's amazing. You know, you can't believe how much garbage we're throwing away that isn't garbage that could be used for recycling.
Yeah, the truth is that about 60% of what we now put in the garbage can be recycled. That's about right. So over 50%, between 50 and 60% of what we put in the garbage can now be recycled. That's why we have a larger container, not these little red things that you only put like a couple of days worth of newspapers in and maybe a couple of cans in, and they fly all over the neighborhood. And that's why we have a taller container with rollers on them. And now, so what will happen is, what's unique about this is recycling will not take place every week. It'll be every other week. And the weeks that is not recycled pickup, there'll be yard waste pickup. So yard waste pickup 1 week, recycling the next week. And we think that's going to work out just fine.
Mayor Mike Coleman, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Ann.
Mayor Mike Coleman, we're talking about his recycling program. Hope you'll join us to talk about other proposals in the budget in coming weeks.
I'm always available. And Ann, what we'll do is I'd love to have you sign the first recycling container. Sign it.
Right.
Ann Fisher.
I don't know about you. Okay, well, thanks a lot. Thanks for joining us today, Mayor. Take care.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Oh. Director Alexander Payne's films find comedy in the crisis of his flawed protagonists, a struggling writer and wine snob in Sideways, a retired widower on a road trip and about Schmidt, and now a family man who must face a difficult truth in Payne's new film, The Descendants. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Alexander Payne. Join us.
And Fresh Air begins in about 20 minutes. It starts at noon on 89.7 NPR News. 40 degrees in downtown Columbus, sunshine today and a high of 43. Clear skies tonight and a low of 25 degrees. Sunny skies for Friday and a high of 47. And looking ahead to Saturday, sunshine and a high of 54.
Support for 89.7 comes from Catco, presenting Souvenir, a comedy about a New York socialite aspiring to be a singer and yet can't even hold a note. On stage November 22nd through December 11th at the Rife Center. Tickets and details at catco.org.
Friday night, learn about the history of great female rock stars whose work not only brought down the house, but broke down barriers. Watch PBS Arts from Cleveland, Women Who Rock, Friday night at 9 on WOSU-TV. And All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News. Thanks for joining us.
Elizabeth Lesner is the co-founder of the Columbus Food League. That includes Betty's Fine Food and Spirits, the Surly Girl Saloon, Tip Top Kitchen, and Cocktails. This is getting to be too long of a list. Dirty Frank's Hot Dog Palace and the Jury Room. Her restaurants have received local, regional, and national attention for their green initiatives. And Elizabeth also co-owns and is vice president of Eartha Limited, a restaurant recycling and hauling company specializing in greening Central Ohio restaurants. Welcome to the show, Elizabeth.
Thanks.
Also with us is Eartha Limited founder and co-owner Mike Minix. Welcome, Mike.
Thank you very much. You actually forgot my official title. Oh. That is Dumpster Diver.
Dumpster Diver. And what is your official title with it?
Bag Lady.
Bag Lady.
Yes, Bag Lady of Eartha. Vice President's much too stuffy.
Well, Mike, you started Eartha Limited in 2009. I've been wanting to talk about it for a long time, but was getting my own bearings in a new job. What inspired your decision?
Just seeing the amount of waste that's produced at large-scale events and within the food service industry, I thought it had been too long and this company should have existed 5 to 10 years ago.
20.
Do companies like it exist elsewhere? Is there any template for you?
No, we're writing our own book as we go now. There are others that take pieces of what we do, but to have the whole package, we are the only ones.
Why restaurants, Elizabeth? Why? I mean, I know it's the business that you're in, but mm-hmm. in general, as far as the waste that goes on out there, why are restaurants something that you think is needing focus?
Most of our landfill is filled with primarily food scraps, foods we eat three times a day, some of us. We go out to restaurants. One of the only industries that's actually growing right now in the slow economy is food service. Restaurants, actually nursing homes, schools, they all provide meals. And with that comes a tremendous amount of waste. Mike and I look at things as this waste, not as trash, but as byproducts for something else. All of the things that we consume can be turned into other things, be it energy, be it, you know, plastics, be it cardboard. Everything can be reduced, reused, and recycled. When I looked around at my peers, when I looked around at the city itself, the amount of garbage that you see leaving a restaurant or a food service operation is, I would describe it as obscene. It's a lot of waste.
And so how did you two get together? How did you meet? How did that happen?
I'd say it was a meeting by chance. I had not known Liz a year and a half, 2 years ago. And I went in there and I met her and I was shaking and sweating profusely.
she's Liz a big
Lesner.
Shot. Yeah,
yes.
Right. I mean, I know.
If I could have started my business with anybody in this entire state, it would have been Liz. And I looked at it as my one shot and we were going all in. And, I think we talk about it and laugh about it a little bit now, but yes, I was shaking.
Mike's
leaf on a
being
tree.
Very humble. What Mike hasn't told you is prior to us hooking up, he had actually done the last two prior Super Bowls. He'd done all the composting for both events. The Super Bowl had never gone green before. It had never gone zero waste before. And they thought, hey, we should try this. So they asked for proposals, and I think Mike's might have been the only proposal that they got, because who on earth would want to take on such a big gig? But Mike did it, and he got it. He did a couple Super Bowls in a row. He also did the Ohio State Fair, and it makes sense that something like a state fair, agricultural fair, should be composting, recycling. And by doing that, the Environmental Protection Agency actually made him a leading expert in this large-scale event recycling business, because really nobody had done that before. So I couldn't choose or come up or dream of a better partner than Mike to help us, help our restaurant group Go Zero Waste, but also help all other food service operations that we could think of go sustainable, go green, reduce, recycle, and reuse everything that goes through their kitchens.
My guests are Michael Minix, co-owner and president of Eartha Limited, and his partner in crime, I guess, or in do-gooding, Elizabeth Lesner, co-founder of the Columbus Food League and co-owner and vice president of Eartha Limited. If you have a question or comment for them, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You know, I know that there's like other groups out there, Big Green Heads, one of them, that tries to do it on a local basis. Are there others? I mean, can one organization do it all in terms of these kinds of recycling efforts?
I truthfully think that it's going to be a collaborative effort amongst many different groups. I mean, we specialize in some things and we don't in others, but working with Big Green Head, as we have for the past few years, has opened our eyes to these other people out there that are trying to do good in their own neighborhood. While we help Big Green Head with recycling at a couple of their events, there are still plenty more out there that we are going to be working with in the near future.
When you talk about getting rid of waste in an environmentally friendly manner, what does that involve, particularly when it comes to the restaurant grease? I think that's the thing that's really – what do you do with it?
Oh, restaurant grease, it's funny. When I started my business 10 years ago, I used to have to pay somebody to haul the grease away. A few years ago, they actually paid us for it, companies that manufacture it into – nobody wants to hear this – but lipstick and a lot of beauty products animal feeds.
Wow.
But right now, what we can use it for is to fuel our trucks. We have what we can do is just one restaurant. We have Dirty Frank's. Goes through – how much is it, Mike?
It's about 150, 140, 150 gallons a week.
Of fryer oil. So think about that next time you enjoy your Dirty Frank's.
It's nice to know you're changing the oil,
for one thing. Yeah, so change the oil. But all of that now can fuel – just Dirty Frank's in 1 week can fuel one of the trucks for 1 week.
And does it – I mean, is this actually up and running now?
We just got a grant from the Ohio Department of Natural Resources to buy the biodiesel processor. And where is that, Mike? Do we have it yet? Is it showed up?
It will be online soon.
Yes.
It is a work in progress, but we are working there. We're working toward that goal right now.
Yeah.
So it's something that's really can and will happen.
Oh, yes. Yes, very much so.
Yeah. We got a grant. It took a lot. Everything takes longer than you think, but ODNR has just been such a fabulous supporter of our group and has really helped us in so many ways. And this was one of the things that we couldn't afford starting out that they've kicked in to help us with. So that's awesome.
A year and a half ago, speaking of, you know, what your hopes and dreams were, I read this in the other paper. The dream was to open a 30,000 square foot storage facility in Franklinton that employs as many as 50 people and uses trucks that run on restaurant.
Yep.
You know, grease to pick up paper, glass, plastic, and other recyclables from restaurants to a composting facility, and in the case of food scraps, to surrounding farms. So you're working on...
We have 20,000 square feet. We're not quite at 30.
Not bad, though. Yeah. And
Mike is actually personally hauling. Actually, are you taking compost from this building right now?
Hopefully in the very, very near future, within the month.
You mean right here
right
at Fawcett
here.
Center?
At the Fawcett Center,
wow.
Yes.
We're going to be taking your old coffee grounds and banana peels and whatever else you got.
And Franklinton, it's in Whittier Peninsula, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And 50 people, not yet?
Not yet, but we think that once we have about 5 contracts. I don't know what you're about. We're allowed to say or not about to be signed, and we're going to explode pretty quickly.
Yes, we will.
We had to change a couple of laws when we started our business. SWECO would not allow us to compost. They own all the trash in Central Ohio.
Interesting.
And we started our business in July, but we had to work hard to change a law that existed, and it didn't change until just this past March. So we really had to. Had some delays. We were pretty naive when it comes to.
You mean composting? Don't mean to interrupt you, but composting for profit, or composting. At an industrial level, or just
removing waste from their landfill put us in violation of SWECO's laws, because they own all of the waste that comes out of any household or business in Central Ohio. So that was, you know, several months of delays just to be allowed to compost. So a lot of the laws that we deal with are frustrating. We were naive. We didn't know about them. We were honestly just wanted to do the right thing. We wanted to make sure that anything that could be reused was being reused. But with that came a lot of red tape.
Well, you know what you say, you know what they say about the road to. Well, anyways, are you now picking up the paper, the glass, plastic, and other recyclables? Is all that happening from restaurants?
As of right now, we're mainly focusing on cardboard and glass bottles. Glass market has really fallen out within the past few years. It's not worth a lot, but we're able to use it in a different way. We've asked another small business to move into our facility called Candles with a Cause. They take wine bottles and liquor bottles, make candles out of them, which we then sell back to restaurants, and they donate a portion of their proceeds to different charities around town.
And are restaurants buying them?
We're getting them ready to also explode with the rest of our business.
Okay. 614-292-8513 if you want to talk to our guest right now, Mike Minix. He's co-owner and president of Eartha Limited with his co-founder of the Columbus Food League, Elizabeth Lesner. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We only have about 6 minutes. I'm getting the look, so don't put it off till the last minute. We had a question from Tommy. He called in. He wanted to know if red composting worms are available for purchase in Columbus. I'm making the leap of faith. You know what he's talking about.
Yes, I do know what he's talking about. Vermicomposting. I don't necessarily utilize that method, or the composting facilities we work with don't, but I'm sure he can find somebody online. I don't know exactly a location to tell him, though.
Okay.
Sorry about that, Tommy.
The food scraps idea, are you getting them to the surrounding farms? Is that working, or is that part of that composting issue?
No, well, we've fought that law, and we won, thank goodness.
Okay.
So Mike, our chief dumpster diver, actually fills up a truck with I don't know how many barrels of very, very heavy food scraps are extremely heavy. And where do you take it to, Mike?
We take it to Price Farms Organics out in Delaware County. You know, through a process that takes about 3 to 4 months, it turns right back into soil, which they sell.
And they pay you for that?
They don't necessarily pay it for us yet.
Okay.
In the near future, there is a lot of potential for this industry. There are new types of power plants being built that run
anaerobic
off of this.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about the anaerobic digester and if that's getting out. I know the Kurtz brothers.
7 miles south of Columbus.
It's up and running now?
Mm-hmm.
The Kurtz brothers one, right?
It is, yes. Yeah. They're not necessarily – that plant isn't exactly made to handle food scrap, but there are plenty of more being built. There's about 3 in the state right now. There's about 20 more that will be online within the next 2 years. So within 2 years, we hope to work out some deals where we are getting paid for food scrap, which we in turn will then pay the restaurants that we work with to help offset these costs.
Melissa in the North Side, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I was calling to see if there are any public schools in the Central Ohio area who are doing this. I teach in a school with a pretty strong environmental science component. I'm just kind of curious, you know, how do you get schools to buy in, or how do you get people to buy in this idea, you know, they have a presence there?
Well, it's not necessarily buying in. We show them how we can be cost-effective in making this switch, where it's not only are they going to be becoming more sustainable, but they're going to be saving on operating costs. We have been contacted by a few school districts, not necessarily all located within Columbus, but we have been taking those talks a little further. It moves a little slower than what I would like to, just due to the size of these districts, but eventually we will be there. The amount of food that they serve at each building is humongous. It's only logical that we would be able to come in and remove that and compost it.
Thanks a lot, Melissa, for that call. Todd in West Jeff, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I have a farm, and I'm interested in being able to use compost from restaurants, as well as potentially biodiesel for my delivery trucks.
Well, first of all, I'm sorry to cut you off. Keep going.
Oh, no, go ahead.
I was going to say, if you're going to think of creating a Class 2 composting facility, there are some regulatory things that you will need to go through with the Ohio EPA, but they are wonderful about this. The Ohio in general has been putting on more food waste composting facilities than any other in the state within the past few years. So I'd go to them, and they will be a great help in getting you there.
So that farm that you talked about in Delaware County, they've done that already?
Yes.
Is that what they have done? Okay.
Yes. They're a Class 2 facility.
Okay.
Great.
And eventually you'll be able to also buy this biodiesel off of us within the very near future. So if you're looking for your trucks, you can contact us here in the very near future.
EarthUnlimited.com.
All right, Todd, thanks for that call. Ann in Springfield, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hello. I'm calling. I'm really enjoying the show very much. The we've been trying zero waste events in Clark County for a while. We had really good success.
You're with the OSU Extension, right?
Actually, I'm with the Clark County Health Department.
Okay.
But we've helped the OSU Extension do zero waste events.
Okay.
And you had a caller earlier that was asking about vermicomposting.
Mm-hmm.
They can get guidance and maybe even have workshops on it if they contact the OSU Extension office in Franklin County. And there's a really excellent webpage, ohioline.com, which has all sorts of handouts on vermicomposting. So your person that wants the little red wigglers, they can probably get a source for those from the OSU Extension
office. I want to thank you for being from a health department and being pro-compost. That's one of the problems here in Columbus is that we've got a rat problem within the city. So, you know, being able to compost has been difficult, and we've had to really come up with ways to quickly remove the compost from facilities and get it out of here so that it doesn't attract, you know, rats and vermin and things like that, which is a very real and important concern. But I'm really glad to hear that.
It can be hard to have home composting in an urban environment.
Yep.
Because you get that little home composting pile and somebody isn't managing it exactly right, and
yep.
They have these small yards. So before you know it, your little problem with odor or critters becomes the neighbor's problem with odors and critters.
Right.
So it can be hard to have home composting in the city.
It is.
Well, thank you for the program. I enjoy it.
Thank you, Ann, for listening, and thanks for the advice for our other caller. Okay, so Elizabeth Lesner, wanted to make Betty's Fine Food and Spirits, which just is celebrating its
10-year
anniversary this year. Happy anniversary. Your flagship operation on High Street in the Short North, you wanted to make it 100% waste-free by 2011.
Mm-hmm.
Yay, nay?
We are, the last part is the compost part, which as soon as these trucks get going, but thankfully we have been able to do a great deal of composting. We're working with Franklin County. They're building a... our restaurant group has a community garden, but then we're also building a community garden next door to our newest restaurant, the Jury Room. And thankfully, we've been able to take our food scraps there to those places. But we're really looking forward to that. This is a lot of effort on our own. You know, we go around and pick up and take it. So we're excited for Eartha to finally launch the food composting, which should just be in a couple of weeks, where they come and take our stuff away, and we feel good that it's going to a good place.
So to answer your question, yes, before 2012. That is definite.
Okay. Mike Minnick, thanks for joining us today in the studio.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Mike Minnick, he's co-owner and president of Eartha Limited, and also Elizabeth Lesner. Thanks for joining us again.
Thank you, Ann.
Elizabeth is co-founder of the Columbus Food League and co-owner and vice president of Eartha Limited. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is WOSU 89.7, WOSU HD1, and WOSU 820 Columbus, and streaming online at WOSU.org. 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.
Support for the Statehouse News Bureau stories on 89.7 come from the Ohio Education Association, representing 131,000 teachers, support professionals, and higher educational faculty who are working for great public schools for every child. Online at OHEA.org.